All right, people, I need a go-no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
Five.
Button, who's got the button?
Four.
There is no cause for alarm.
Three.
Everybody hold on to something.
Two.
Just press the button.
One.
It's showtime.
Welcome to episode 1097 of the Geek News Central podcast. It's Monday, February 29th. This show is sponsored in part by GoDaddy. And listeners just like you. Great deals from GoDaddy can be found at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. You can support this show today at geeknewscentral.com/insider or paypal.me/geeknews. You can always pick up Ohana gear at cafepress.com/Ohana store. Everyone, welcome back. Glad to be with you. Just can't seem to get two in a row out here recently. talk a little bit about why I was having some challenges and why we didn't get a show out on Thursday. And we'll talk about that here in just a few minutes. More importantly, I want to give a very, very warm, warm welcome to all the longtime viewers and listeners of the show. Thank you for being here. And more importantly, if you're brand new to the show, hey, thanks for checking the show out. And we want you to be able to get connected with the Ohana here. We'll talk about that here basically right now. And all you got to do to get subscribed to the show, and I'm all thumbs right now. I'm trying to press too many buttons at one time. you just go over to geeknewscentral.com, and on the website, you're going to find the link there to subscribe via iTunes or via Android, or old school via email. You can also, if you don't know what I'm talking about, subscribing to the show. There's basically instructions on how to get going. So again, get over to geeknewscentral.com, and you'll find the link there to get signed up. And don't forget, get hooked up with the newsletter as well. There's a link for that on the website. And when you do so, you'll get an email from me immediately following this show with all the links to everything that I'm talking about today. So really, that's the best way to get connected. And if you have comments on the show, or if you want to, you know, reach out to me, you can do that via email at geeknews@gmail.com or on Twitter at geeknews. Either way is perfectly fine. You can find me on Facebook, Google+, really anywhere. And the thing is, we want you to be able to get access to this show easily. So, you know, iTunes is easy. Subscribe, one-click subscribe on Android is easy via the, you know, the 13 or 14 apps that support that. We've got the ability, of course, to watch the show on the Roku at the Tech Podcast channel on your Apple TV, on the Amazon Echo by telling Alexa, play the latest edition of the Geek News Central podcast. Alexa will start doing that. You can listen on Stitcher, Blueberry.com. Really, there's lots of places to catch the show. So whatever your platform of choice is, that's the way to get, you know, really to get connected and stay connected. Of course, we want to talk a little bit about our partner shows. And, you know, we got a lot of great stuff going on here with the family. And we've got the new media show with Rod Greenlee and I. We've got the Pro Gear website, progear.guru. We've got the Gadget Professor with Mr. Don Bain. We've got Health Tech Weekly with Mr. Jamie Davis. We've got The Elder Divide with Mr. Ted Ani. And we got No Better Than Average with Jacob and Jeff. And all those links can be found, really, to all those shows can be found off the main site at geeknewscentral.com. Just go ahead and click on those. Those will get you to where you need to be to get subscribed to all of our Ohana and all of our family here at Geek News Central. So great lineup of shows. From gadgets to talking about what's going on with the elder community to utilization of health tech. It's all becoming ingrained today. And, of course, Jacob and Jeff always digging in and finding cool stuff to talk about on their show. So, of course, this show is sponsored in part by our good friends over at GoDaddy.com, and this is the last day of the month. It's always the day of the month where I'm kind of the most nervous because I'm hope that the fruits of my labor have done well for the sponsor and that they will be contacting me in 2 or 3 days and saying, you had a good month, you had an average month, or you had a bad month. We always want them to say we had a good month. Everything's been tracking that way. So, really, GoDaddy has got a full line of products and services. Really, everything you can imagine under the sun to get online is available through GoDaddy. Mailing list software with their new acquisition, Mad Mimi. We've got, of course, codes to get discounts on any of those products and services. We've got the 30% off code. We got 99cent.coms. And really, for those of you that are thinking about doing something for Mother's Day or for Father's Day or whatever, holiday is upcoming, build a website just for that occasion or build something that your family can use as a legacy. And really, there's a great way to start with a dollar a month for the first 12 months, manage WordPress hosting or a dollar a month economy hosting, again, with free domains. Both these packages come with free domains. A dollar a month, 12 bucks for your first year to get started. For those of you with business owners, you can get a little deeper here. You can get a domain website builder. You can get a Microsoft Outlook email address, for a dollar a month for 12 months. And the website builder product is really pretty powerful even for non-business owners. So you can really build a website very, very quickly. Lots of templates, lots of tools, assistance where needed. Website builder is a product that GoDaddy is really priding itself. And if you see any of their ads on TV or hear things on the radio, they're always talking about website builder. And again, a dollar a month for the first 12 months. So all my codes can be used independently or basically just clicking on the link on the website at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Well, that's just where we want you to go to lock in some savings. And the main most important part is that you share. Share these codes to the friends, family members, people that you know. If you hear about, you just get a whisper of someone saying, I'm thinking about doing a website or I'm doing a blog. Say, hey, I'm going to help you save some cash. and definitely share that with your friends and family. But anyway, I want to thank all of you that have supported GoDaddy this past month by picking up products and services over there. We will let you know in a couple of days how it went. But for all of you that did, really eternally grateful because they keep the lights on, keep the family fed, gas in the car, the insurance paid, house paid, all that stuff that allows me to do what I do here, and they make it possible. So if you're a fan of this show, they are the ones that power the machine and take care of our writers and everything. So a lot riding on our GoDaddy sponsorship, and no pressure. Just thank you for your support. Okay, so what happened last week? Let's just be honest, dad duties. my lovely wife had a overnight trip with my son to go to the Polynesian Culture Center, which is, on the other side of the island. So they stayed in a hotel on the other side of the island. It was, the kids had an overnight thing, and they went to two different places, and so she was a chaperone, and I kind of held the fort here down, with my two older ones in college. There's really not, they don't need no assistance. They kind of come and go as they please. But my son's getting ready to go. He's in an orchestra group in the middle school, and they're getting ready to go on in what they're calling an island tour. It's essentially going to be 4 days, 2 days over spring break, and 2 days, 2 days over a weekend. And I had to go and listen to the rules, the regulations, what they can bring, what they can't bring. What was supposed to be a 30-minute meeting, but leaving me with plenty of time to drive the 27 minutes home at that time of night at 70 miles an hour, or maybe 60, depending on traffic. I would get home and I had everything prepped. I'd left the house, had everything ready to go. went from a 30-minute meeting, went to a 80-minute meeting. And then I had to meet with the chaperone, and by the time I got home, the show would have just been about finishing. And I said, forget it. And that's why we didn't have it. I think this is the first time ever. And maybe there's been a graduation or something, but there are very, very few. I can probably count them on maybe over 1,000 shows on two hands, the number of times I've had to miss a home show. So my sincere apology. It's understandable when I'm on the road, but when I'm home, I don't like missing ever, you know? So, again, my apologies and, we'll be here with it going straight through at this point. I hope nothing else will pop up. Life does, but dad duty call. As you guys noticed on the main page of Geek News Central, we're just getting ready to get into the tech here. Just a huge stack, huge stack of content that is coming out by the writers. They actually haven't caught up to me yet. So I've got to actually, these are all the in-booth interviews that I did and the other team members did, along with some interviews that were done by the team on some of the other venues. But we've been just smoking it, folks. I mean, there's just a huge amount of content that we're still putting up from CES back in January. And the writing team is doing a fabulous job, but I've got probably one more session of editing to do. And then they'll be, I hope, at some point here, pretty close to being done. But we're over 200 interviews been posted on the website at geeknewscentral.com. So don't tell me there's not fresh content, because there's a huge amount of fresh content on the website. Okay, what else? You guys got any kids playing League of Legends? I'd like to have that particular game go away. My 18-year-old is absolutely addicted to this game. I mean, it is out of control. He needs an intervention. Had a little one in the car this morning. You know, it really was kind of a, you know, let's have a discussion about this thing with League of Legends, and you not going to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, and then having to go to class, and let me see your grades, and no, I mean like right now, let's load your grades up and make sure we're right. You know, let's you know, have some hardcore son father talk. That game is, oh my God, unbelievably addicting. I said, listen, bud, you got a problem. He says, do you think you got a problem? He says, yep, I got a problem. I said, okay. I said, so, you know, it takes like 2 weeks to break a habit here. I said, we can do this a couple of ways. We can go cold turkey, or you're going to have to let yourself, you know, we're going to set a time limit. What do you mean set a time limit? I said, well, I'll just shut the internet off. But I still own the internet in the house. I'll unplug the internet. And he said, okay, 90 minutes. And I'm like, 60 minutes. And he's fighting me a little bit on it. So we'll see how it goes. But it is a major issue. Matter of fact, I know he's playing now because my live stream is dying. And he's going to get, when we get done, you guys will want to hear my conversation with him, because it's causing an issue with the stream for the show tonight. So we'll have a chat with him post show about this. He was warm before I started, and obviously he is playing because the live stream feed just dropped out. That's another thing. It's a bandwidth pig. Podcast awards. You know, I thought I had divested myself of the podcast awards. Long story short, I'm back. I'm stuck with them again, and made a decision to do a complete revamp and reaching out to the community, been getting some quotes on rebuilding the site, and we're going to go forward this year with the same site, different rule set. That's a plan for right now, but typically it's going to be up to the podcast community to bring out the dollars. If they wanted to continue a 12th year after this year, we're probably going to have to raise about $20,000 to $25,000 to do everything that needs to be done to bring this site up into current spec, rebuild it, recode it. The code on the thing's 11 years old, so it's running on its own server. There's nothing that can be damaged if something gets hacked, but that is not what we want to happen, and it's just time to change it out. And in order to do that, we got to change a bunch of things. So I'm sure we'll be talking to all of you a lot more about this as we move forward. If you want to hear more details, there'll be a episode of the New Media Show that'll be going up today as well that talks about 30 minutes with the podcasters at large about what has to happen. Okay, so that's it. Let me get into tech. I've already talked way too long on just this general stuff. But thank you all for being here. And for those of you new to the show, again, this is what we do at the beginning, Geekness Central. We just kind of wrap it down. And Jason, thanks for joining the show. And yes, it is an interesting title, isn't it? Well, and this can only truly be experienced by those of you watching the show. So the title of the show today is, Have We Pissed Off the Aliens? Now, no, I'm not talking about undocumented workers. We're a tech and science show. We are talking about the aliens. Now, yes, before you think I've gone totally crazy, let me define what I'm talking about. I've been thinking about this for a while. I saw this article maybe a week or so ago. And when I saw it, I literally got weirded out. And we all know robots, machines, they're not self-aware. There's no artificial intelligence yet, right? We're still building AI. We don't have anything that's become, you know, like, can you know, that where we're going to have a, you know, a cyborg. We're not at that point. But the folks over at Boston Dynamics did something in a demo video that makes me go, largely because we're transmitting everything all over the internet. We're transmitting stuff into outer space. And what I see that totally weirded me out was this video of this guy with a stick. So you got the robot. He's picked up a box. He's knocked it out of his hands. He's used a hockey stick. And he's pushed the robot back. And just the way this scene goes down, says, if aliens are watching, we have done pissed them off, because unless they're completely organic, which I would assume anyone that's in outer space, they would be coming visiting us, would not be completely organic. But when what it really looks like, I know what he's doing here. He's testing the robot to say, yes, we can push this robot. It won't tip over. It'll pick up the box. And this, I know what they're doing here, but it's such an aggressive move that I'm beginning to wonder, if someone sees this, are we going to piss off the aliens? Now, you guys must think I'm totally off my rocker here, but this particular clip, while this robot's showing amazing balance, while getting pushed around, makes me kind of like, you're going to think this is stupid. Makes me feel sorry. Makes me feel bad for the robot. Now, how is that supposed to happen, right? That's just totally off my rocker, right? But you wonder, at what point do we get robots to the point where they become self-aware or computers become self-aware and they go out on the internet, you know, they're surfing, this artificial intelligence is, and it finds this video and hopefully it has enough context. If it's self-aware and is actually artificial intelligence where it's smart, it will know this is a demo video. But the graphics on it is such that, and I don't know why it bothers me, but this short little 10-15 second clip is one of the most disturbing videos I've seen from a tech, because it shows, while it's showing balance, it's showing this guy being mean. he looks mean. It gives that appearance. So I know I'm totally lost my mind here, but for those of you that are listening and saying, what in the hell is he talking about? Please go to the first link in the show notes and go down and scroll halfway down the page and look at this video and tell me if you don't get weirded out just a little bit. So what do you think, Jason? You're in the chat room. Does that video, you kind of laughing at me, or does that video kind of weird you out a little bit too? So therein lies. Are we pissing off the aliens? You know, they see this, are going to think, who are these organic beasts and what are they doing? Amongst the other things we're doing, you know, are they going to come down and judge us and exterminate us because we're, you know, we're beating up on robots? One would hope not. Okay. One would hope that our sector of the galaxy is remote enough that maybe we're off the map here. Okay, so Jason's listening. He's not watching. Okay, so anyway, funny stuff. All right, so let's switch topics. Here's an interesting move. Federal judge says, third-party doctrine, a perfectly good law. No warrants needed to obtain cell location. Back in December, Connecticut State Court ruled that tracking people near real time with cell site location info required the use of a warrant. 3 months later, a Connecticut federal court has ruled law enforcement can obtain, again, CSLI without a warrant. So again, cell site location info. They can get that info now without a warrant, in bulk and for extended periods of time. So this is the federal court basically came back and said. Now, while the opinion doesn't address the use of subpoenas and the use of basically tower information, it does come down firmly in the sight of the government's interpretation of the third-party doctrine. Whereas here, the government acquired information about a defendant that was in the possession of a third party, which was Verizon, and that acquisition of that information did not involve any trespass upon the defendant's body, house, papers, or effects, and did not involve any interference at all with the defendant's possessory interest in any of his property. Now, those laws were written in the days of non-digital and maybe wired landlines. Not when we are unconnected and sharing data digitally. Now, the third-party doctrine has been subject to tsunamis of criticism, but it, according to this court, remains as good law today. And like other decisions along the same lines, the court echoes the government's assertion that every cell phone user is perfectly aware that their phones are sending all sorts of information to the nearest cell tower. I think a lot of, luckily for, you know, in some instances, lucky for law enforcement, a lot of people don't know that. You know, these people, you know, we have idiots that are criminals that go out and kill someone and they leave their cell phone on, and then the police go back later and figure out where this joker's been by, you know, what towers he's been off of. But this is a loss on privacy. You know, this is definitely a win for the government and loss for the people at large, and that's a ruling that has come down. So you know, at some point, Congress is going to have to address some of these issues. Now, at the same time, the another judge basically ruled that the United States cannot force Apple to help unlock an iPhone. Now, this is on a separate deal. This is a separate ruling from what the current fight is. So, again, on the eve, and again, tomorrow, congressional hearings start. We'll talk a little bit about that. A Brooklyn judge has ruled that the Department of Justice cannot force Apple to assist in unlocking an iPhone in a separate New York drug case. Judge James Ornstein rejected the government's interpretation of the All Writs Act, ruling that it cannot compel Apple to create a software that will weaken its security protections using the statute. Ornstein arguing that the government's expansive interpretation of the All Writs Act would cast doubt on the AWA, who's that, constitutionality if adopted. So, All Writs Act, okay, cast doubt on the All Writs Act constitutionally if adopted. This is an unambiguous victory for Apple. Ornstein is calling this government overreach in clear terms. Now, the implications of the government's position are so far-reaching, this is what the judge said, both in terms of what it would allow today and what it implies about congressional intent in 1789, as to produce impermissibly absurd results. So, this is a big win for Apple. And the judge believes that Apple has a better argument about the role of Communication Assistance for Law Enforcement Act in the case. So, we know the Department of Justice is still trying to compel Apple to create software to help it unlock that phone from the San Bernardino terrorist. And just like this case, the Department of Justice is using the All Writs Act in an attempt to carry out a search warrant for that phone. Now, while this doesn't guarantee victory for Apple in the San Bernardino case, it may have a major impact on how the All Writs Act gets used, as attorneys and Brookings fellow Susan Henze pointed out on Twitter. So this is going to end up in the Supreme Court before this is all over. Now, maybe the next, you know, the next level, if they kick this up a notch, maybe they won't find the same. But at this point, Apple's got a win under its belt. And that's big in this case. And we will see where this leads. Now, if you haven't read it yet, the Apple's opening statement to Congress over its FBI fight is available. I'm not going to read it to you. It's a pretty lengthy, maybe a dozen and a half paragraphs. And it's an interesting read. So I'll have that up in the show notes for you to go through. It's a third item or fourth item in the show notes links, so you'll be able to get to it quick. But if you want to watch in action, the hearings tomorrow, it'll probably be the one time I want to fire up C-SPAN and watch the hearing. It is definitely going to be very interesting. It'll be very full of fireworks. It's going to be an interesting show tomorrow in the halls of Congress when the Apple team and basically the FBI go to have a few words to the congressional folks. So we'll see where this leads. There was something else, too, and I don't have it in here, but apparently, well, I thought I did. I didn't bring it to the front of the stack, and I'll just kind of touch on it lightly. Tim Cook, apparently, either earlier this year, went to Washington, met with the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, Department of Justice, a number of groups, and they had a face-to-face. And I guess at that meeting, Tim Cook pissed off the president's team that was there, basically saying there'd been no leadership from the White House in this fight. And they took quite exception to that. And I guess the conversation got quite terse via sources. So, this battle that's been brewing, likely has come to a head because of that and really other stuff that's been happening in the space here recently. So, obviously. So, it's not something that has just kind of cropped its head up here, folks. This battle between Apple and the government has been brewing. And I can see it right now. If Tim Cook basically insulted the president, the president's team. I would imagine that, you know, knowing how politicians work, that probably the president picked up the phone and said, you know, step the pressure up. And that has probably resulted, and this is my assumptions here, maybe that didn't happen at all. You know, maybe they went and whimpered into their offices. I don't know. But, you know, definitely something has happened here with the Department of Justice, you know, cranking it up on Apple, turning the heat up. So this is going to get large. And in Apple's position continues to be that this thing needs to be answered in Congress. Well, with the current, let's be straight up. I don't know if Tim Cook wants the current House of Representatives and Senate to take up legislation that is going to expose them to having to unlock phones. Because, well, I think that based on the current leadership in the House and the Senate, they would very well be in line to probably put something together. Now, would the president sign it? That's a good question, you know, especially if they're getting heat from Department of Justice. They're getting heat from Homeland Security. They're getting heat from other agencies that are, you know, have issues with what's going on here. Would he sign legislation like that? That's an interesting question. And in a lame duck year, he just might. It's hard to tell. But what do you guys think? They think if Congress put together legislation, it would force Apple to provide and other companies to provide back doors in certain instances when trying to get information on terrorists or so forth. The American public aren't going to be happy with it based upon everything we've been talking about for months here. That's for sure. Okay. Moving on. How many of you are doing Wi-Fi on airplanes? I do. Sometimes I'm able to work 8 hours straight, not have my phone ring. It's sometimes the only place I can really stay focused for a long period of time without distractions. So yeah, I use the internet on day flights a lot. Well, you probably shouldn't be doing certain work on that in-flight Wi-Fi. There was a USA Today columnist who was on a flight, on an American Airlines flight. He was approached by a man who claimed to have gained access to the content of his emails, which showed communication with sources for a story that the reporter was working on. And the person that talked to him provided proof that he had access to this. So we all know when you're on any public Wi-Fi, you're bound to give up some personal information to anyone who might be watching the traffic, whether that be the company providing the service for marketing purposes or someone with more malicious intent. For example, when I'm in a hotel room and I'm doing company-sensitive email, I'm not on the hotel's internet. I'm usually on a MiFi. And I also make sure that I am not using a non-secure platform on HTTPS on email and so forth. Because if you're using old school POP and SMTP, that's just unencrypted goodness for people sniffing email. So in-flight Wi-Fi services like GoGo Wireless, the service that this gentleman used on his flight, and Global Eagle Entertainment, the service available on Southwest Airlines and some other carriers, are in many ways just like public Wi-Fi. Available at really any coffee shop or mall or hotel, McDonald's, you name it, where access is granted through a captive portal. That logon screen that pops up in a browser window requiring either payment or acknowledgement of terms of service before you reach the web, and there really is no password protection for that Wi-Fi connection. So whatever you do, and if you have open shares on your computer, someone else in that network could do some snooping. Now, I think what I'm going to do on my next flight, that I basically have Wi-Fi, I'm going to put a port sniffer on my computer and just kind of look and see you know, what's really happening on the network. I'm not going to go snooping on, but I'm going to look at the kinds of traffic going across, just from and see, okay, who's going on port 22 and who's going on port 400, and, you know, or not who, but how many of those types of connections, and how much of it looks secure and how much of it's just open text. But that's pretty crazy here. Some of these networks, in-flight networks, and they break privacy even harder and introduce more potential ways to attack devices using them, because they were either inadvertently or purposely blocked some of the most basic network security tools like HTTPS and VPNs. Gogo's designed its network specifically with law enforcement needs in mind, as its executive explained 2012 letter to the FCC. And so in other words, their network's pretty open. So good write-up over on on Ars Technica. Have the link up in the show notes. So if you're going to be doing something very, very, you know, critical, and you connect via the internet on the aircraft, just be aware your machine may be exposed. If you did an upgrade to OS 10 to Blacklist recently, over this past weekend, and your Mac's having Ethernet port issues, turn on the Wi-Fi. They have a patch for you. They've got a major problem. And it's killed Ethernet ports on a lot of Macs. So just turn on the Wi-Fi, go get the update, so your Ethernet port will continue to work, all right? Good article over in Computer World about explaining how to identify a stolen iPhone. You know, what I found in my experience since trying to sell my wife's and kids' Samsung Galaxy S5s, is that I get every con artist in the country, when I put it up on Craigslist, that want to buy these things, they want to bring me a check, money order. No one wants to buy a phone in cash anymore. And I had a guy tell me, I'll send my agent to come get the phone from you. And I'm like, your agent? Is he bringing me cash? Oh, no, he'll have a certified check. I said, well, he'll have to drop the certified check and then come back 3 days later after the certified check clears my bank. Oh, I can't do that. Well, no phone for you. So there's a lot of stolen phones out there that are being sold, obviously. So if you're getting ready to buy a phone online, the folks at Computer World have a good article on how to identify a stolen iPhone specifically, and the things you should do to make sure that that phone you buy off of Craigslist is not actually hot. And that when you get it, you'll be able to use it and won't be locked out of it. So a good instruction set there. All right, the Raspberry Pi 3 has arrived. It's got a Bluetooth and Wi-Fi that's been baked in. This is new. So for $35, the same price as its predecessor, the Raspberry Pi 3, again, has got 802.11n. It's got Bluetooth 4.1, and that's big. So again, the Raspberry Pi designed for hobbyists, developers, and students. This is a great little dev project, and I've got a lot of friends that have been playing with Raspberry Pis, and a lot of do-it-yourself projects out there for this, too. So, can't beat that. $35, my goodness. All right, those of you that live in Europe, if you've got a Hive smart thermostat and you are on vacation, I would advise you to have someone go check your house. Apparently, the Hive smart thermostat turned up the temperature to nearly 90 degrees. Thanks to what they're calling a temporary glitch. So the Hive Smart Thermostat is, I believe, only available in the UK. And British Gas is the company that I believe owns it. But I think what they were trying to do was just squeak out a little more profit from their customers by turning their heat up for a couple of days to burn more fuel. So they had a little bit of a problem. So it sounds kind of familiar to like Nest, yeah? All right, there's going to be these new iPhones that are going to be rolling out soon. Apple's most exciting new iPhone is not going to have the, it's going to be a smaller phone. It's going to have, there's going to be one that's with a 4-inch display. And it's not going to have a 3D touch, which monitors the force applied with each tap. Yeah, so that's going to be missing, and it's only going to be in the I guess, Apple's premium line of 6S and 6S Plus. So don't expect a few features in this new phone that's coming, this whatever they're going to call this thing, the iPhone SE or something to that effect. There will be a few features limited. All right. I'm going to share something with you all. And if you're not watching, this is a MacBook selfie stick. And I'm going to show you the insanity in this. This is absolutely ridiculous. Some dude built a selfie stick and he put his Mac on it to be able to take pictures as he was walking around Times Square. And I thought, is this like a gag? Is this guy doing this to sell these? MacBookSelfieStick.com. I'm here to relieve you. It's an art project. These aren't for sale. And don't recommend you putting your MacBook on this type of a selfie stick. You're probably going to end up buying a monitor or a screen as you drop this thing and smash it. But you do look at the people looking at this guy and saying, who's this dweeb? But you'll get a chuckle out of the picture when you see it up in the show notes for those of you that are listening. All right, my friends, I'm going to say it correctly today. Waze, yes, Waze has been updated. It's added a cleaner interface and a grab bag of new features. The new version catches the Android app up to the iOS app counterpart, which got the 4.0 update in October. So again, the 4.0 update will finally bring parity to the iOS version with a refreshed UI, quicker access to key features, and improved alerts for all those road hazards. So if you're an Android user and you use Waze, definitely go out there and pick that up. Did you hear that the Google car had a wreck? Yep. Well, you know, Google's prided itself in that their self-driving fleet has never been responsible for any of its crashes. Can't say that any longer. One of Google's self-driving Lexus SUVs drove into the side of a bus at 2 miles per hour. They were getting up to a corner, and there were some sandbags in around a drain where they were doing some work. They were trying to prevent probably hazardous waste from getting down in the drain. The car adjusted by moving over a little bit. The bus kind of moved into its spot. The car tried to come back, and yep, crunch. So the bus, no damage. The Lexus front tire and front corner panel smashed in. So we have our first Google self-driving car wreck, again, at 2 miles per hour. All right, that article I was talking about, Tim Cook just found it in my stack here. I'm going to put that up in the front. We'll have that up in the show notes. And it was the title of the article was on BGR. It's the exact moment when the FBI realized how big its battle with Apple would be. Is that a headline for you or what? Okay, let me go back here. Let's move down. Okay. We know that we talked last month about the 30th anniversary of the Challenger disaster. One little thing I forgot about the Challenger disaster, that there was about 4 or 5 engineers at NASA that begged the space agency not to fly that day. They knew there was challenges. They were worried. One of those guys was named Ebling, and this gentleman, who is now 89 years old, he's been troubled. He's been having challenges, having guilt for decades. Now, he was one of the guys that basically told NASA, "Let's not fly." This gentleman is quite religious. And over the years, he came to believe that he hadn't just failed the Challenger astronauts, but and now 89, he basically has been able to forgive himself for what he felt was an inexcusable failure. Well, after this story published on NPR, thousands of people have written to him, and he can't see real well now, so his daughter's been reading the letters, and actually, the current NASA administration sent him a note as well. And I guess to be to put it in a word, he has, I guess, gotten some relief from his troubles. And basically, the NASA, the current NASA administrator, sent him a note. And the NASA administrator today, Charlie Bolden, said, "We honor the Challenger astronauts not through bearing the burden of their loss, but by constantly reminding each other to remain vigilant and to listen to those like Mr. Ebeling who have the courage to speak up so that our astronauts can safely carry out their missions." So, and I would think that NASA had learned this lesson a while ago, and I feel bad that this guy's carried this burden for all these years and feeling guilty. But, you know, if he is one of those guys that was out there, you know, do not fly, and they did, and we all know what happened with Challenger. I guess it's not like he feels vindicated at all. This is, he just feels he didn't do enough. And so anyway, a little side story there to the Challenger 30th anniversary. This is kind of curious. For those of you who live in Virginia, the Virginia Senate has voted to exempt police officers, their personal information exempt from Freedom of Information request. So in a time when police accountability is a mainstream media topic, the Virginia State Legislature is having none of it, prompted by a recent court decision granting the Virginian pilot access to police employment records. The state Senate has passed a bill that basically neutralizes a brief win for transparency advocates. The Virginia Senate voted 25-15 on Monday to keep the names of all police officers and deputy sheriff secret. Senate Bill 552 by Senator John Cosgrove, Republican of Chesapeake, applies to any local or state officer, including officers from agencies such as Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control and the Virginia Marine Police. The bill's wording put law enforcement officers in the same accountability bracket as state employees making less than $10,000 a year. I don't know exactly. I guess those employees making $10,000 less a year aren't on the books. But they basically don't want police officers being targeted. And this, and what was really was going on was they were publishing their wages. They were publishing how much they made. I think that's dirty pool anytime. But, you know, that's, you know, part of being in the public spaces. Typically, your wages are not private. But interesting move by the Virginia State Senate. There's a good article in Business Insider. I'm not going to go into it too deep. But, you know, many of you, when you're on Facebook, you know, we see the ads, we see the polls, the quizzes, the videos that, you know, you, and most, a lot of that stuff is sponsored stuff. It appears that Facebook's now, or Facebook is, their ad network is getting so large that many of the ads that they are procuring, or they're basically, you know, getting from media buyers, are not going into Facebook itself, but third party applications that they partnered with. And, you know, they did $5.6 billion in revenue last quarter. And 80% of it came, or 80% of that $5.6 billion came from injecting a wide variety of different ad types amid, you know, all the stuff that we put on Facebook. But what was surprising to me was that this, they're calling it Fans, F-A-N-S, is in a lot of different apps, stuff that you would not associate at all with Facebook, but there's calling home to mama. So it all goes back to the mothership where you can be targeted and so forth. So this is an interesting write-up, and this is a good one for any of you wanting to see what's going on in the advertising space as it affects your privacy as you're cruising around. Computers aborted a SpaceX Falcon 9 launch. They actually had the motors up and running. We're about ready to kick it into space. They found some oxygen overpressure, and they shut it off. So this is the third attempt, and they are still on the pad. So we'll see when they try it again. But there was a delay in the range because a boat had went into the, you know, basically no-go area. And from that came a delay, which caused the fuel mix, I guess, to get a little bit off. So anyway, the satellite is is still sitting on top of the launch pad. And of course, they're waiting for this thing to get in because the satellite will provide video and data services for Asia and to provide over 7,000 channels of entertainment. So a lot of money sitting on top of the rocket. But they had it was just fired up and ready to kick, and the computer said no go. We're a hold, and it shut it down. So they'll refuel it and give it a try again. But, you know, with the, you just want to think about the type of money that's going overseas or is not being collected by the IRS. But Google's parent company, ABC, could be a big winner in a Intel, yes, the chip company Intel, tax dispute. So Google's parent company could gain at least $3.5 billion in new tax benefits if Intel succeeds in its international tax dispute with the IRS, an amount that exceeds Google's entire 2015 tax costs. The case, which the IRS appealed to the Ninth U.S. District Court of Appeals last week, is being closely watched in the tech industries elsewhere. At least 20 companies, including Microsoft, eBay, have disclosed that they're monitoring the outcome of the case involving share-based compensation. And this is huge because this could be taxes they would not have to pay. This is interesting. You know, you think about all the money leaving the country. That would be $3.5 billion that Google would not have to pay due to part of its overseas business and the structure that it has right now. So we'll see where this goes. And I don't know the complexity of the IRS. Really don't even want to try. But it shows you the battles going on for companies not to pay tax. Sprint. You know, I've got a Sprint USB stick. I get 6 megs of service on it. Cost me 6 gigs a month. Cost me $53. Sprint is opening 500 new stores in the United States. You know, isn't this a company that is like almost out of business and they're going to open 500 new stores? Can they afford to do this? It gives you that, you know, kind of that thing. I don't know. We'll see. But that's what they're planning on doing. All right. Many of you go on Reddit. I spend some time in some Reddit channels, the podcast channel and a few others. But some dude spent 4 years creating an imaginary Reddit for the year 3016. Yes, he spent 4 years creating an imaginary Reddit for 3016. Okay, is this an art project? This was built single-handedly by Blair Erickson, which imagines the front page of the internet for the distant future's viral news. There's a tons of amazing, cool stuff in this site that nobody has found, he says. Secret stuff that might blow a few minds. Erickson, 37, the CEO of Jamwix, a San Francisco-based software and VFX company he founded to finish post-production on his film Banshee Chapter. He is also a veteran Redditor, the former moderator of the Futurology channel, and the person responsible for one of the site's most popular posts in 2012, which is a Photoshop front page set 1,000 years in the future. So, who has time? Who has time to build something fake? Why didn't he build something real with that energy? Sometimes I'm just, okay, if it's an art project, fine. I scratch my head a little bit. Who wants to go read something that, sci-fi, I understand. But reading a site that's basically future news that is totally made up? Okay. All right. Brita, they've got a Wi-Fi enabled picture. Automatically orders filters from Amazon. I don't want stuff automatically ordering for me. You know, that's just a credit card disaster waiting to happen. It really, really is. I'd like the device to tell me, hey, I need a new filter. Can I order a filter? And then I say, yeah, go ahead and order a filter. I don't want just my water pitcher to be able to say, oh, a filter's getting old. I need a new $44.99 filter here. No, that's not how life works. But I would be, so I am sure a lot of people say, oh, this is great. This is great. Can't wait to use that. Techniques. You know, I was told, and I think I talked about this already, but the SL1200, which I owned four back in the 80s. Yes, I had four of these beautiful turntables that were used by every DJ known to God. These things were, you know, you heard the Wheel of Steel, right? Well, the Techniques 1200 had a turntable deck that was truly Wheel of Steel. It was heavy. It's fantastic. It worked. Oh, just unbelievable for doing mixes, pitch downs, pitch ups. You know, it just. Oh, I had four of them. I sold them all, and I don't think I got more than like maybe $300 a piece for them. And how stupid I was, because the new SL1200 cost $4,000, and to think that I could have had $16,000, actually more. The vintage ones are now are getting $5,000-$6,000 a piece. Folks, if you've got something that you think was cool, all right, if you think is cool now, and you say, okay, it's kind of outdated, I don't need it no more, if you have place to store that, granted, you're going to have to store it for about 30 years, I just shudder. And I think about this, and Techniques explains why its new SL1200 costs $4,000. So here's what it is. It's so coveted, they can. That's my opinion. They say, oh, the manufacturing costs are really high now. We had to retool everything, and because we're not making a lot of these, I want one, but I can't afford one now. Tony, if you're listening, can I have one of my 1200s back? Oh, man, that dude probably's got him in a garage someplace. He probably doesn't even know. Maybe that's what I should do. Maybe I should look him up on Facebook. Say, hey, man, you got any of those 1200s left? What are you doing with those? Hey, can I buy one back from you? And then he'll go look on the internet, right? That's what will happen. He'll figure it out and be like, yeah, man, I'll sell you one back for $6,000. All right, Square's money sending app now holds on your cash. Square Cash is all well and good if you want to send money to someone right away, but if you want to set something aside for later, such as paying back a friend, they've got this covered after today. Square has updated its Android and iOS app to introduce the optional cash drawer, which holds on to the money you receive in one handy place. In other words, it's a bit of like PayPal and other digital wallets. You can withdraw money whenever you need it, and soon you'll have the choice of adding money from your own bank account. So this is kind of cool. So if you use Square Cash, precisely because it's not a go-between like PayPal, you can carry on as usual. So kind of nice, but Square is definitely understanding the power of PayPal. And anyway, that's cool. Hey, AT&T is suing the city of Louisville over Google Fiber pole attachment rules. AT&T has filed a suit in federal court alleging that the officials in Louisville, Kentucky overstepped their authority, giving access to AT&T's own telephone poles to Google Fiber and potentially other competitors. So AT&T does not want Google Fiber in there competing. They don't want them using their poles. So AT&T owns between 25 and 40% of the poles. So the city owns the rest. So typically what cities do in these types of situations is they make them rent space on those poles. So, you know, so many, you pay on so much a hang. That's how it works when cities do franchise deals and that type of stuff with providers. They basically say, you know, we reserve the right to tell you that you have to rent, you know, space on that pole to some competitor of yours, and they have to pay, again, a fee to be on those poles, but that's how it works, and AT&T does not like it, so they're going to try to shut that down in a big, big way. All right, let me take a shot of H2O here, wet my whistle as we head into the home stretch. All right. So a number of years ago, we talked about a company that was basically saying, for $25 a month, if you have the cash, we will protect your digital virtual space for eternity or until your money runs out. So this company called Inteller, Intellitr, was selling its immortality service for $25 a month for people who wanted to create a digital doppelganger that would live on even after the death. Customers upload a photo of themselves to Inteller's virtual eternity website, took a personality test, provided a voice sample, trained their avatar's brains and artificial intelligence engine by feeding it stories, memories, and photos. So basically, this was a site that your kids, your grandkids, your great-great-grandkids would go to, and they could hear grandpa talk and tell stories and so forth. Well, the company shut down in 2012 with only 10,000 customers signed up. So what is the, you say, Todd, this is old news. So what are you trying to get at here? It's going to be very, very hard as all of us move forward. You know, you think about the digital footprint we're creating today. My digital footprint is incredible. It's huge. You think about the over a thousand hours of this show alone, 3,000 interviews, tens of thousands of digital pictures, all the things that I've done online. I have a repository for, I have a backup scheme here with everything, and I have, you know, stuff in the cloud as well. So, it's basically the whole United States would have to get nuked and Hawaii included for me to lose my digital footprint. But at that point, it would be like life would be over anyway, right? So how do we plan for our demise? You know, do you want your digital footprint to live on? Here's this company that was, charging a lot of money a year. So you'd have to have a lot of cash for that to go any further. You hope that your people that in your family would pay for that later on. I mean, they wouldn't care. They would just, delete that account. We're not paying for grandpa's digital lifespan. So what do we do about all our digital data? And this is kind of the question of the show today. I want to ask you guys this. What are we going to do? Does it matter? Are future generations even going to care? Are they just going to laugh at us? Are they going to come back and get, we should have done it that way, or why did they do it that way, or boy, they were stupid, or what do you think? As I'm recording this today, and so let's say one of my great great grandkids are listening to this 100 years from now, are they thinking grandpa's a total bozo, or will this even survive? So that's the question. What do we do to protect our digital footprint? Or do you even want it to go forward with you? Would you just rather be a memory? Or maybe we're so, sick of ourselves or so stuck on ourselves that we think that it's going to matter. I don't know. I get big thrills out of going into Ancestry.com. It's a site that I subscribe to. I go in there and build on Family Tree, and I find information, and I just get tidbits. It's just like newspaper articles or a birth date or a name. I really get no context, and I really would love to have context for some of my family that came from Ireland, some of the family came from Scotland. I'd like to have some of that context of their past. And I'm sure there's going to be people in the future who are going to be doing as much genealogy stuff as the rest of us do now. And they're going to go. They're going to have context. But maybe we're going to have too much context. Maybe we'll have too big of a digital footprint that people won't be able to get through it all. So what do we do? I recorded my grandparents on my mom's side. I got to have them tell me a lifetime, and we set for 5 days, a couple of hours a day, and I recorded memories from the Depression and memories from all these stories about when they were doing my grandfather had a band and what he did when he was running a construction company and all these things and how they met and just all those kind of stories that maybe we don't all get all the time. And I treasure those 10 hours of videos. You know, that is, to me, it's just absolute gold, because I wouldn't remember otherwise. They were able to tell in the first person and share. And I really wish I could have took a lot more of that data. So, you know, as you guys are talking with your loved ones and family members, and you're talking with your grandparents and stuff, start building these family information files. You know, family history, why someone did this, or, you know, what happened here, how did this person die, or, you know, all those stories that make up life and our family trees. So what do we do to store all that? Love to hear your feedback, geeknews@gmail.com. Okay. Ring has unveiled its own solar panel for powering its stick-up cam security camera. Ring, the company, became, again, the connected doorbell. And actually, I was looking at one of these in Costco yesterday. A little pricey, and my door, I have a standard home door with a peephole, but on the other side of that door is a, in Hawaii, a lot of people have metal security fences, doors, and basically it's bolted in where no one's getting anything. It's not like a screen door. It's a metal door with a regular a deadbolt, and also its own handle lock. So I can leave, essentially at night, I can leave the home door or the inside door open and let the air continue to move through the house without having to worry about someone, you know, kicking the door in. They're not going to kick it in. They need lots of tools and lots of noise to get through this door. It better come through a window. So I'm trying to figure out, okay, is that having this this stick-up cam, the connected doorbell, having that there, am I going to be able to see through that screen enough stuff to make it worthwhile having? So I haven't decided yet. If any of you are using a connected doorbell and have an outer door like that, a security door, let me know what you think about how the video looks. But the stick-up cam is basically a cam you can put anywhere. But, of course, the biggest problem with these things is you need power for them. Well, they've come up with a solar panel for powering its stick-up cam. This is awesome. So you can pre-order the Ring solar panel now from Ring for $29, down from the normal price of $49. Solar panels are expected to start shipping in April. So you can power this thing, put this cam really anywhere. Question is, will it power enough for 24/7? One we'll have to find out. Also, for you Mac users, largely undetected Mac malware suggests that disgraced hacking team. Yes, remember hacking team and all this, you know, the hacking team got hacked. Well, apparently Hacking Team is back in business, and they have returned. So this malware was only detected out of 10 of 56 AV services. So there is stuff out there, you Mac folks. You still are susceptible if you're not running any type of antivirus software. You may end up finding out the hard way. All right. There's a new website. Getwi.fi. It's 500,000 open public Wi-Fi hotspots mapped. All you got to do is put your zip code or an address in, and it'll show you areas where there are open public Wi-Fi spots. So as you expect in California, there's a lot. I looked in around my area here in Hawaii, and there was just a few. So I think it depends on where you're at, the density, and where they have mapped. But again, getwi.fi. All right. Also, Minecraft, and my son actually told me about this. Minecraft has released a combat-focused update that lets you carry items in both hands. So it dramatically streamlines how you play. You can carry both a sword and a shield when you're expecting a rough fight, or place torches while you're digging tunnels with your pickaxe. No more switching back and forth for some mundane task. So he says it's a little tricky to manipulate. I'm sure he'll get the use of it soon. So if you got any Minecraft users in the house, let them know. All right, last couple of articles here. This is so ridiculous. Some government agencies are blaming the media for terrorists using encryption. Really? Really? Like all the stuff that's been in the news? With everything going on, with all these security releases and all that stuff, wasn't responsible for the terrorists using encryption? Come on now. Come on now. They're on the internet. They see what's going on. Please. The media being the blame. So that is just such a crock. Oh my God. Oh my, you got Americans that are using encryption. You know, true red, white, and blue, you know, to the core, who are using encryption because they don't like what the government has done. Come on now. Oh my goodness. It just shows how far out of touch can some people be. All right, about 100 workers have walked out of a Tesla battery plant building site in Nevada. This is all about the union saying, hey, we don't want out-of-state workers coming in and working on this plant. So a little bit of a walk-off today. So I'm sure they'll get that figured out very, very quickly. And Samsung finally reminds users not to charge a wet Galaxy S7. Remember, they are water resistant, not, you know, waterproof. And if you have been putting your Galaxy S7 in the water, it may not be a smart thing to charge it afterwards. You may get to experience something called flame and fire. And water, it's very conductive across, the positive and negative points. And it just it's amazing what happens when you have a short like that. That power running right up that ground line. It's truly remarkable what happens to electronics when you actually put power up the wrong way on a phone. Oh, man. Very, very funny. All right, so I've got some email here. And did I have it loaded? I didn't. But, I've got this loaded, so I can go over here. And I want to thank everyone for their ongoing support. Got an email from Tom. Say, hey, Todd, I'm right to request a shout-out for the 100 weekly... I'm writing you to request a shout-out for the 100-word weekly challenge at one day until the... Oh, my God. I'm going to have to put the link up in the show notes. In 5 weeks from this date, February 29th, this weekly podcast goes 10 years, 520 weeks in a row. Pretty amazing milestone. 461 people have posted stories over the decade. The total number of stories are 8,400 plus 20 authors who have posted over 100 stories, and 13 have posted over 100 stories in a row. One of our authors has posted 390 stories in a row. So, Tom Marquette. So, let me go ahead and load this website. So, he's talking about, it's the 100 Word Stories Podcast. And it's at one day until the day I die.com. Oh, that's kind of cool. So anyway, I'll have the link up in the show notes. So congratulations that to Tom, and appreciate the information. I got an email from Jeff saying that Vizio and Google reportedly build TVs with Chrome built in. Yep, we're aware of that. We know that a lot of those TV sets are coming out. I actually saw two Android TVs today. I was over at the Navy Exchange. I got a TV in my bedroom. It's a Samsung, and this is what it's doing. You turn it on, and about every third or fourth power on, the actual screen will light up. The rest of the time, it's dark. It'll turn on, you hear the voices talking, but the lamp won't start for the television. So you have to cycle it four or five times, and then finally the lamp will turn on. It's an LED television. So basically it's the screen lamp. So it's definitely got a problem, and it's not worth the actual to go out and repair it. So it was a cheap Samsung to begin with. So I was kind of looking around today what I can hang in the bedroom and replace it. My wife doesn't know it yet, so shh, okay. She knows the TV's having problems, but I'm getting tired of hitting the power button 10 times, all right? I get an email from, let's see, what date was this? Yes, this was before the last show. Okay, so Todd, I'm a couple of shows behind right now, so others may have already written about their thoughts on Apple unlocking the phone for the FBI. I almost never agree with Apple, but I think Apple's right in denying the order until either the court or Congress have a chance to rule on it. What the FBI is asking for is a tool to bypass the 10 failed attempts rule that Apple puts on the phone. As it stands now, if you ever enter the wrong PIN more than 10 times, the phone will erase all data. They're looking at looking for a way to bypass this restriction and try as many PIN numbers as they want, as quick as they want, too, Nicholas. Apple's fear is correct, because if they were to create such a tool and it never got out, think of the fallout. This would be a hacker's dream come true, and no iPhone would be safe. And also, what would stop the FBI or any law enforcement agency from using the tool on every iPhone they receive? I'm not saying that restrictions couldn't be put on it, but I would like to see it spelled out that law enforcement would require a warrant to look at the phone. I agree. Furthermore, if Apple does create such a tool, then every government and law enforcement agency around the world will want access to it. And while Apple and FBI would try to safeguard the tool, who is to say that every other law enforcement agency in the world that made the same request would? And I understand. I understand completely, Nick, the challenge here and the concern. Got an email, another email here from, oh, that one that I didn't play. I couldn't get that comment to play right. So that was already done. Anyway, we're done. We're wrapped up here. I'm long and need to wrap this thing up. Thanks for being here. If you got comments on today's show, I've had the banner up for those of you that have been watching the whole show. Geeknews@gmail.com is the place. Those of you been listening, you just got it again. You can follow me on Twitter at Geek News. But lots going on in the space, folks. It's been, I've been busy. And I got my taxes, got my business taxes into the accountant yesterday. She sent something back to me today. I got to go through and do tonight yet. So, yeah, busy time. But think I'm going to have to write the IRS a check this year. I'm not looking forward to it. After having the big a rebate check from putting the solar on the roof. I don't have any green deductions this year, so I think I'm going to be having to write the IRS a check. I don't let them keep my money. I pay pretty close to what I need to pay, and I basically, if I need to pay them a little bit at the end, I'm good. I don't like them being a savings account. I know a lot of people do. But I just get the feeling, based upon everything I'm looking at and I'm doing the math, I'm going, oh, mama mia, I'm going to have to pay, probably $4,000 or $5,000 this year. So we'll see. I hope it's not that much, but it could be. But anyway, keep supporting GoDaddy. All right, everybody, thanks for watching. It's been my pleasure bringing you the show today. And everyone take care. We'll see you next time. And, of course, aloha here from Geekness Central. Everyone take care. Bye-bye.